something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And I'm Julie Lee Douglas.
Julie, welcome back from vacation. Where did you go?
I went to Vieques. It's a small island right outside of Puerto Rico.
Ooh.
I went to go see Bioluminescent Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah, with a microplankton that glows.
It?
Unfortunately, and they're not quite sure what's going on there, they were not surfacing. So they don't know if it's a changing climate or if they were disturbed somehow. But kind of a bummer, but I hope that they get that back because it's an amazing thing. I think it's only one of two places in the world that has that level of bioluminescence.
Oh, cool. I mean, you got to see other stuff, obviously.
Yeah, lots of wild horses, all sorts of really cool things.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the podcast and welcome back, listeners, to outer space. We've been talking about wanting to hit some more space content because, I mean, that's part of the DNA of the show, and we haven't been there recently, so here we go, into space, into some big cosmic questions.
Yeah, because we've talked about this before, this idea of the Goldilocks principle and how Earth is just the perfect place, right? It's not too hot, it's not too cold, but what else is going out there in the universe? And we're going to try to get at this idea of, you know, the universe is not this dead, you know, void of space. It's actually a living universe.
Yeah, you always end up coming back around to that that whole scenario, right? You look out into space as much as we can, as an individual, understand space. You mm-hmm. see all that darkness, and as the saying goes, there's the idea that there's life out there, and there's the idea that there's nothing out there, and mm-hmm. both of those ideas are completely mind blowing. To think that there is life thinking or just curdling and you know, reproducing itself somewhere, or there's just nothing. It's just a dead universe. And both of those have a tremendous effect on you if you stop to really chew them over.
Yeah, especially if you add the time element to it. Because
yes.
On one hand, you could look at, you know, some people look at space and the universe and they think of it in futuristic terms. One day we will conquer it. One day we will know more about it. Other people look at it as a relic, as if you're peering into deep space, you are peering into deep time, and you can reverse engineer time and try to figure out something about how we came into being.
Exactly. Now, we, of course, have humans have an evolving, continually evolving understanding of the cosmos. You go back not even too long ago in our very brief period of time in as a species in this cosmos, and it is just a very, like, the briefest little tip of the needle.
Yeah.
And you have our understanding based on basically ancient Babylonian cosmology, you know, and you have just very rough ideas about what we are and where we are. Our cosmos was limited by what we could see with the naked eye.
Yeah.
And we inevitably, being self-centered as we are, put ourselves at the center. So there is the idea that the Earth was the center of the observable universe, which again was not even that large.
Yeah, and a lot of this boils down to the Copernican principle, right?
Yes.
And we're talking about the mid-1500s when astronomer Nicolaus Copernicus said, hey, the Earth is not the center of our solar system, which really was disturbing to many people because that was putting out the question of, well, what if we're not the center of it and God is not the center of it, then who is the center of it?
Right.
Who's driving this ship?
And he introduced the idea of the sun. He was a heliocentric, the idea that the sun is the center of things and we are just revolving around it. Now, again, based on his limited understanding and observation, that made perfect sense. And that was a huge step in the right direction because the Earth is revolving around the sun.
Yeah, and we've been building on that idea ever since and really sort of expanding out from that and trying to figure out, okay, so if, you know, the Earth is not the center of it and, you know, we're revolving around the sun, then let's move beyond that. Let's move beyond our galaxy. And so we're still trying to move toward that. But you had said something I thought was really interesting. You said that our history and our idea of this in terms of deep time is just occupying a space on the tip of a pin, right?
Right.
And I wanted to mention, if you guys haven't already seen this, in Cosmos.
Oh, yes. I know exactly where you're going.
Yes. Yeah. Which is hosted by Neil deGrasse Tyson. He gives a wonderful explanation of this idea of really how much time we humans are occupying in deep time. And he takes the entire 13.8 billion age of the universe, and he condenses it down into 1 year. This is not going to give justice to it, this explanation, so that's why I urge everybody to check out. I think it's in the first episode.
It is. It's towards the later part of the first episode.
Yeah, this graphic of this calendar, this 1 year, the first second of January 1st is the Big Bang, and the last second of December 31st is the present day. And he walks you through this. And according to this calendar, all life on Earth only appears within the final week of that year, and humans appear only in the last hour of the last day, and all of our recorded history from the founding of every religion to the fighting of every war takes place in the last 14 seconds of December 31st.
Yeah, it's crazy. Like, just to think that even if life on Earth exists only 1 million more years, say in 1 million years something catastrophic happens, then life on Earth was still just this tiny little blip in this grand timescape.
Now, for some people, that might make you feel sort of divorced from life. But for others, you can look at this deep time and realize that this fabric of matter that's helped to create us has always been, well, not has always been there, but has been there for a really, really, really long time before and after us. And we all are intertwined by that.
So again, you mentioned that that calendar year. Our entire cosmic history as a calendar year, that calendar year is representing roughly, based on our current estimates, 13.8 billion years of history. That's 13.8 billion years from the beginning of the universe as we understand it to the present day.
Yeah. And how do we know this? How can we calculate this? Well, first of all, the universe cannot be younger than the objects contained within it. So
exactly.
You start to look at the objects. For instance, you look at stars and you begin to measure their mass and their brightness and figure out the lifespan of that star. So you have more massive stars burning faster than their lower mass siblings. And by the way, the more massive, the more brilliant they are and the easier they are to spot. So a star 10 times as massive as the sun will burn through its fuel supply in 20 million years, while a star with half the sun's mass will last more than 20 billion years. And that gives us a clue, especially when you look at something like globular clusters, which have these similar characteristics. And you know that the oldest one of these globular clusters have stars with ages between 11 and 18 billion years.
All right, so that's one set of evidence. It's kind of like trying to figure out what time some guys robbed a bank. You ask one witness, and they go, oh, I think they went in around 5 p.m. And you ask another, and they say, oh, I think they went around 5:10. And then you sort of compare the notes. Well, one witness here is saying, ah, I think it has to be around 11 and 18 billion years based on the age of these globular clusters.
Yeah, that's one clue that kind of gets us in striking distance. And we'll talk a little bit more about why people have the general consensus of 13.8 billion years in a second. But we have to kind of go even further back into the past before we can do that. And we got to talk about this fog at the beginning of time. And in order to do that, you got to talk about the Big Bang.
Yes. Now, Big Bang, of course, is the big theory about how the universe came to be and what basically what the universe is, really, in a very straightforward manner. The main opposition to this was historically the steady state theory, and that's the idea that the universe has always existed, and therefore it's always existed at the same density. And that'll make more sense in a minute. But we're talking about the Big Bang here. So there is no before the Big Bang. That's important to note. There is no outside the Big Bang. The Big Bang, to go back to the beginning of history, to go back to the beginning of that that calendar year that we talked about, you come to a moment when all matter is a singularity. And since all matter is a singularity, all time is a singularity.
The single point.
Yes. A single point of time, a single point of matter. It's almost impossible to comprehend. It's such a foreign, and even though it's very small, it's such an immense idea that time and space, everything is down to the smallest point possible. And it's just kind of like my brain almost breaks trying, because I want to place my understanding of it in a system of time, because I exist in time and it's the only way I can understand things. And this is something that is wrapped in time and it's part of its compression.
And it was outside of time at one point. Right. And when you're talking about that pinpoint, you're talking about just a tiny pinpoint of energy. This description is from Nola Taylor Redd, writing for space.com. And she says, when the universe was just 10⁻³⁴ of a second or so old, that is, by the way, a hundredth of a billionth of a trillionth of a trillionth of a second in age, it experienced a huge burst of expansion known as inflation, in which space itself expanded faster than the speed of light. And during this period, the universe doubled in size at least 90 times, going from, that pinpoint, that subatomic size pinpoint, to a golf ball size ball of energy almost instantaneously. And she says that after inflation, the growth of the universe continued, but at a slower rate. And then as space expanded, the universe cooled and matter formed. And 1 second after the Big Bang, the universe was filled with neutrons, protons, electrons, and anti-electrons, photons, and neutrinos. And this is where it gets very interesting. She talks about how during the first 3 minutes of the universe, light elements were born during a process known as Big Bang nucleosynthesis. And for 380,000 years or so, the universe was essentially too hot for this light to shine. So you have that heat of creation smashing atoms together with enough force to break them up into this dense plasma soup of protons and neutrons and electrons. And that's scattered like fog. That's the fog of the beginning of time.
That's pretty crazy. There's no other real response to that. So here we are, roughly 378,000 years after the Big Bang. Like you say, everything's been this hot mess for ages.
That's a good way to say it. Yeah.
And there's not much that can really happen there. It's just everything's kind of I hate to use the word chaos, but it's kind of a chaotic state.
Mm-hmm.
But then the universe cools to about 5,000 degrees Fahrenheit or 2,700 degrees Kelvin. And this is crucial because this is cool enough for electrons and protons to recombine into hydrogen atoms. And this also releases photons, making up the radiation that we come to know as the cosmic microwave background.
Yeah, that recombination era sets loose those first flashes of light that were created during the Big Bang. So now they are detectable in the form of cosmic wave background radiation. Why is this important? Well, it's important for so many reasons, but one is that it helps to support the Big Bang Theory, the fact that this is detectable.
Right, the second witness.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that it allows us to, again, get a bigger take on what was happening in the universe. It gives us a chance to reverse engineer the timeline. And it's been measured with NASA's Wilkinson Microwave Anisotropy Probe and the European Space Agency's Planck spacecraft. And so they've looked at this radiation left over from the Big Bang, and they can look at the density, the composition, and the expansion rate of the universe as a result. And in 2012, WMAP, they said, we think that, you know, looking at the different data here, that the universe is probably about 13.772 billion years old. Then you have the Planck spacecraft that says, we're looking at 13.82 billion years. And that's where you come into this idea of, all right, the consensus is 13.8 billion years old the universe is.
And again, it's on one hand, we were looking at the age of the items in the universe, and here we're looking at the rate of expansion and how big it is, and what the cosmic microwave background is telling us.
Yeah, and so, okay, this is all important. Why? Because it gives us a little bit more data to work with, and we'll talk about this in a second, because you start to look at the universe in a different way. It wasn't just this, you know, static thing that's always been existing. There were dynamic changes. And as a result, it kind of upends this idea of the Goldilocks theory, this idea that you have to have the absolute perfect conditions for life to occur. Because if you look, again, at our solar system, you look at Earth, that's the bed that Goldilocks is going to bed down in, right? Because
right.
You've got sustainable water sources that are pretty, you know, solid in terms of staying regular. Particularly when you look at the distance the sun is from the Earth, right? But if you look at something like Mercury, which is closest, super hot.
Right.
That's not going to work. But if you look at Neptune, super cold, or just if you're feeling nostalgic, if you look at Pluto, super cold. That's what we normally have thought about. We've thought, okay, Earth is really special because life has happened here against what seems like all odds. But when we get back from this break, we're going to talk about this idea that life could be more plentiful than we think, and perhaps even before Earth was even formed.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mother's Day is right around the corner, and in true She Pivots fashion, we're highlighting moms who've dedicated their lives and their pivots to supporting mothers. The iconic Christy Turlington will join us to talk about launching Every Mother Counts after pivoting from her 90s supermodel days. And later, the co-CEOs of Baby to Baby will share how they're addressing the needs for millions of babies and moms. So tune in and subscribe to She Pivots. New episodes out every Wednesday. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
But We Loved is a new podcast about queer history coming May 15th. I'm Jordan Gonsalves, your host. Growing up, I thought being gay was the worst thing I could ever be. The gay history I learned was tragic.
Jerry had died of AIDS, and it's like, what is happening?
It was survival. That's why it's called survival sex.
But as I interviewed queer elders, I realized there was another history that I had never been taught. A history of courage and perseverance.
I wanted to take control of my story. and not be ashamed of it.
And it was a history full of love.
The joy we found in saying husband again and again and again was incredible.
And while learning this new queer history from my elders, I realized they had so much wisdom to pass down.
The key is to understanding yourself, learning to love and embrace yourself.
From iHeart Podcasts, I'm Jordan Gonsalves, and this is But We Loved. Listen to But We Loved May 15th on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
All right, we're back, and it's important to stress again that we used to live in a time where we had this geocentric fallacy, where we thought that the Earth was the center of things. But when you get into this Goldilocks scenario, you get close to falling into another type of geocentric fallacy.
Yeah.
Because you're again stressing the idea that Earth is special, that life on Earth is special, and by virtue of that, humans are special as the primary evolved intelligent species.
And therefore, I am special.
Right.
Right. And we are all special to a degree. But if you look into deep space, if you look into deep time, then you start to look at this thing called the habitable epoch. And what we're talking about is for millions of years after the Big Bang, the universe was in a kind of interim state between lumpy gas and the cool galaxy-studded darkness that we see today when we look up at the night sky. There were no galaxies at the time, only large stars probably embedded in dark matter. So along comes someone named Abraham Loeb, and he is an astrophysicist at Harvard University, and he says, hey, we can do simulations of these early years. And what people find is that there were tens to hundreds of times more massive stars than the sun. And these giant stars floating alone could have had rocky worlds like Earth in orbit around them. And this is where the idea of a habitable epoch occurred after the Big Bang, but before life on Earth. So what does Loeb do? He puts together a couple calculations here.
Yeah, and the craziest one here is that... Okay, today, the temperature of that relic radiation we were talking about, that CMB, that cosmic microwave background, is just about 2.7 Kelvin. But at an age about 15 million years ago that we're talking about here, it would have kept the entire universe at 300 degrees Kelvin. So we're talking about heating emerging from that cosmic microwave background.
Yeah, and again, this is just a blip in the eye of time. It's, 15 million years after the Big Bang. But any existing planets at that time would have been in that habitable zone, as you say. Goldilocks here would have had numerous beds to get into because the universe was still bathed in that warm gas from the cosmic microwave background, but it had cooled down. So you would have liquid on these planets or, no matter where they were in relation to a star.
Yes.
Which is huge.
Yeah, because liquid water is one of the building blocks of life.
Exactly.
And it's one of the things we look for when we look out and sit and think, is this exoplanet capable of theoretically supporting life?
Yep. There would be energy to kickstart life forms. You have your liquid water, which would slosh around the surface of planets with atmosphere.
Now, as Loeb points out, this would be a very weird time for life to evolve anywhere, because many of the building blocks of life on Earth, like carbon and metals, they only exist because we have these massive stellar explosions. We have the supernovas that,
right.
So, you know, we are all star stuff. And there was less star stuff to go around because this is early in the universe. There haven't been as many stars to die. And this would have been an age where most of the elements on the periodic table didn't even exist yet. So you had fewer building blocks to build things with. It's kind of like if you're really into Legos,
mm-hmm.
and then you find the building blocks, be they Legos or some other brand that like your father or an older sibling had, and you think, how did they build anything? They didn't have those little wheelie doos or the little rotating things. They only had the colored blocks. So it seems like you would be very limited in what you could construct. And yes, that's one of the crazy things about this is trying to imagine, well, what would life on one of these worlds have been like? What kind of form would it have taken?
Yeah, it's kind of funny because Loeb says, if you think about it right now, you look up into the night sky and you see all these galaxies and you see all those stars shining, and that's sort of, you know, our people out
yeah.
there. But this would have been an isolated, a lonely kind of life with, as you say, just a couple of Lego parts. Would it have borne out intelligent life? Probably not. Alexander Villinkin is a cosmologist at Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts, and he says that a few million years in this habitable epoch is too short of time to produce intelligent life. Because if you think about humans and how long it took for us and all the building blocks before us to create the sort of complex intelligence that we have, that's 4.5 billion years of history on Earth, and that's about 3.5 billion years of those in which life has been wriggling around our planet. But Loeb says, hey, when I'm talking about life taking shape here, I'm not talking about intelligent life. I'm talking about simple life forms like algae.
Yeah. Now, another thing to keep in mind, too, one other thing that works in the advantage of this this theoretical early life would be that same isolation that they had would also protect them from cosmic radiation and asteroid bombardments and
yeah.
other things that could conceivably snuff out life before it even, you know, got going to any degree that mattered.
That's true. Even though it would have been isolated and lonely, you're right. Some of those mm-hmm. elements that might have impacted them greatly, them or whatever life, whatever form that might have taken on some of those early planets, wouldn't have been completely wiped out by an asteroid.
Now, some of you may be wondering at this point, okay, well, what, you know, that's interesting to think that there was this early epoch in which very primitive life could have evolved and then perished. But how does that affect the current scenario? It's like saying, oh, well, you know, once long ago this happened, but how does that affect the present? Well, ultimately, what Loeb's really pushing about this idea is that it makes us have to rethink what life could be like out there now.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes the equation to a certain degree about life in the universe as a whole, not just in ancient times in an early epoch, but even in our current epoch.
That's right. That recasts the idea of the universe as a living universe, not a dead universe. It doesn't make Earth feel so lonely in the sense that perhaps it's the only planet that has ever experienced some sort of life form on it. Also, it brings into question this idea of, well, if we know this, just this fraction of information about the universe's history, what else is out there to support the idea that somewhere in, you know, billions and billions and billions of light years away that we can't even measure, is there another planet that could sustain life currently? Is it in the near future? Has it been in the past?
Yeah, we're gonna resist the temptation to go too far into the deep end on this one. But you really have to then think about all the various forms life can take without even getting into the idea of intelligent life, because then you have to stop and think, well, what is it that we call intelligent life? Is it this, is it self-consciousness? And if so, how many different types of consciousness exist, for some sort of organic being? How many different versions of time perception exist for an organic being? I mean, we spend a lot of time on this show, dismantling human perception.
Mm-hmm.
And as you dismantle it, you can imagine, just like a car, if you take all the pieces apart, and if you tried to put them back together in varying ways, like think of all the different ways you could reassemble some version of intelligent life on another world. And those are just the ones we can possibly conceive of.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a couple of ways to go at this if we really wanted to fall down the rabbit hole. And mm-hmm. one is just from a chemical perspective, we could say, well, you know, we're carbon biased.
Right.
We think that only life forms can start with carbon. But could there be another configuration that we're not aware of? Probably not. But that's one argument. Another is that some people will say, you know, there's this anthropic principle, this idea that life here exists on Earth only because it's observable to us. Therefore, life does not exist outside of the Earth because it cannot be observed, or, you know, there maybe are not life forms that can observe themselves.
Right.
But that one's really sticky territory to get into as well, because, again, you're talking about ideas of consciousness and what is consciousness.
And then to what degree is any kind of intelligent life going to destroy itself? To what extent is any form of intelligent life going to eradicate other forms of life in its vicinity? And then we sort of fall back into that whole Goldilocks affair, where we're, again, basing our understanding on what intelligent life can be based on the only model we have. And we have to depend on the only model we have. But then we can't help but have our expectations colored by that.
No. But you know what makes me feel all sorts of warm and cuddly?
Cosmic microwave background?
That, too.
Okay.
I like to think of it just cooking me passively. Kidding. The Voyager 1.
Oh, yes.
Because it's out there. That probe that was launched in 1977, along with Voyager 2, we know last year that it left our solar system, and it's in interstellar space. Still giving us data, but, you know, it's kind of getting weak right now.
Yeah. It is the human Sharpie on the bathroom of the universe that is in which we have written humans was here.
I yeah. like that. Yeah, that's because it has the gold album on it, right?
Exactly.
Which contains a bunch of different sort of audio ephemera of life on Earth. So you have like a baby crying, the sound of a kiss. You also have images on there, just in case someone intercepts it about a billion years from now.
All right. Well, on that note, let's call the robot over here for just one quick listener mail. All right. This one comes to us from Brandon. Brandon writes in and says, "Hi, Robert and Julie. My name is Brandon, and I'm a huge Stuff to Blow Your Mind fan. Keep up the great work. I just listened to your brain hacking podcast on habits. Something you said in the podcast struck me, and so I decided to write this email. You mentioned something about taking a vacation as being a good way to break bad habits. This was very true for me. I'm terrible with biting my nails, and I'm constantly trying to stop. At the end of last year, I traveled to Europe with my sister for 2 weeks. When I got home, I realized I had not bitten a single nail once. I was completely stunned. I had not even thought about the entire time I was overseas. Simply being in a new environment and doing new things was enough to help break my old habit without much effort on my part. The day after I got home, though, I immediately noticed it was once again a struggle to not bite my nails, and I had to really try hard to stop myself from doing it subconsciously. Just some interesting tidbits I experienced, and I thought I would share. Love from South Africa, Brandon."
All right. Yeah, I noticed that, too, when I was on vacation, that I wasn't checking my phone every 2 seconds. Because, you know, you've got that just compulsion. And I finally kind of broke free of that. And the funny thing about this, my husband's always making fun of my Virgin mobile phone.
Uh-huh.
Because he has a shiny iPhone. But it worked brilliantly in Vieques. And I think that's because Sir Richard Branson has Necker Island nearby.
Ah.
And I got to think that the network there is pretty strong.
What's it called? Necro Island?
Necker.
Oh, okay. That's
I know you were getting all like, Necro what?
Like the day of the dark side of Branson there. But.
No, Necker. I think about it as necking because it's Branson. For some reason, I think of him as always necking.
He's always happy looking, so.
He looks, yeah. You know, just tanned and like he's living the good life.
Yeah.
With a robust wireless network. In the islands.
All right. Well, there you go. Hey, you want to check in with us? You want to share your thoughts about the habitable epoch? How does that change your understanding of the cosmos, your thoughts on the cosmos in regards to reality or even science fiction? What do you think extraterrestrial life might consist of? All these questions are valid, and we'd love to hear from you. There are a number of ways to get in touch with us. The best is just simply to go to stufftoblowyourmind.com. That is the way to get a a strong dosage of stuff to blow your mind. That way there are no algorithms getting in the way of what you see. There, you know, you're not having to depend on likes and shares. That's just all of our stuff all the time. Our podcast episodes, our videos, our blogs, as well as links out to various social media accounts that we have, such as our Facebook, our Twitter, our Tumblr, our Google+, our YouTube account, which is Mind Stuff Show. And yes, if you want to get in touch with us the old-fashioned way, tell them how they can do it.
I will in a second. First, you guys got to check out Robert's show, his Monster Show, which is on our YouTube channel, Mind Stuff Show. It's awesome, so give it a look-see. In the meantime, you can send us an email at blowthemind@discovery.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.